FireTalkRadio.com.
Theme song!
This is the Firefly Funhouse! And I want to introduce you to some very special friends that I met along the way.
This is EC3.
Hey, this is Max Brown, King Robert from the Royals.
This is the undisputed future Seth Rollins.
Hey, this is Kane from WWE.
Hello, this is WWE Hall of Famer, the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels.
I'm Bristol.
And I'm Aubrey from ATTV, Flipper Flop Vegas.
Hi, this is Bree.
And this is Nikki, and we're the Bella Twins.
Yes, this is Broken, Not Hottie. This is Christopher Daniels. And what I like to do on my off days is listen to the rap, and now you are too.
Satisfaction is guaranteed.
It's time to experience the award-winning The Rack.
Goodness gracious, great balls of fire.
I love kickball.
I'm back, taking souls and digging holes.
I'm going to break you, bitch, you hear me?
You can look, but you can't touch.
Ruthless aggression.
With your host.
They've been lying to you. Heroes don't exist. Y'all become addicted to the illusion of what a hero does for you. Have I mentioned that I was once addicted to eating sponges?
Lindsay Ward.
Look at me, woman.
And you can just call me Taker.
Oh my God, it's Taker. Taker, Taker, Taker. Does Taker hate me? Oh my God, it's Taker.
And she was a wicked, wicked child who spat and swore and chewed tobacco.
I like puppets.
Stickers! And her producer, Sir Rocket.
My little creatures of the night will now experience the magical art of puppetry.
If you smell... Ow! What the game is playing!
Live on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
We're here.
Yowie wowie!
Welcome to The Rack right here on WildTalkRadio.com. Sorry, had a little hiccup there. Anyway, we're on WildTalkRadio.com for our friends over at MBGFilmsYouTube.com/MBG1211. And if you're listening to us over on RackRadioShow.com, WildTalkRadio.com, or directly on Twitch, thank you so much for tuning in. We greatly appreciate it. If you're on Twitch and you happen to have a quick second, well, you can follow us for free. All you have to do is use your Prime Gaming sub of if you have one and if it's available. So just click your little purple button down at the bottom of the screen and do that if you feel like it.
It's Boots the Asses time.
Thanks so much to Matt for their tier one sub. That's 19 months. They're currently on an 18-month streak, so congratulations to Matt. So yeah, it's that simple, guys. You can just follow the channel, or if you just want to, you know, hang out and chat, that's fine too. This is not a drill, guys. We're live because it's NXT Takeover Night. I'm your host, Lindsay Ward. Joining me, as always, is the ever faithful producer slash co-host slash handyman, Sorokin.
Hi. Follow us at Wild Talk Radio, at Rack Radio Show, at Lindsay Ward. You can tweet us all night long. Come to WildTalkRadio.com, RackRadioShow.com, or Twitch.tv/TheRichardLive to interact with us throughout the night, because there's a lot of exciting stuff that happened at NXT Takeover. Because yeah, there was a couple disappointments. We're going to just flat out say there was one major disappointment I had on the show, and we'll get to it when we get to it. But before we get into all of it, we need to hit this.
Hailing from the Jelly Bean Goo Pit, the crowd chasing, but always falling, and falling. The ultimate fall guy. The assistant to the assistant regional NXT analyst. The intern, Kane Kittens.
Happy Valentine's. I'm going to earn a crown.
Eventually.
Eventually.
One day. Maybe.
If Fall Guys is still a thing.
If Fall Guys... Oh, I mean, it's still a thing. It's just not the major thing anymore.
Yeah.
But the major thing tonight was NXT TakeOver Vengeance Day. Live on the WWE Network. And to say that things are about to change in the NXT landscape, well, that would be an understatement.
Just a bit.
Because on the pre-show, we saw the debut of a superstar, LA Knight.
who is the former Eli Drake, in case you missed it and you don't know who LA Knight is. He has made his NXT Rock, TakeOver
it's,
debut.
Rock, it's...
You said...
What?
You said it wrong.
It's L.A. Knight.
Dummy! Yeah!
There you go.
I'm just getting to it. Just getting to it. The former Eli Drake made his intention clear that he is now signed, as we saw during the show, with NXT.
That basically means no one is left in NWA.
Like, pretty much.
Nobody. James Storm left. He's with Impact. Thunder Rosa is with AEW. Ricky Starks went to AEW. I guess that means Eli here. Or is it LA Knight here? Yeah, there's like no one left. Except for maybe the Rock and Roll Express.
And Nick Aldis.
Oh yeah, Nick Aldis is the lone standard bearer holding that belt that really God only knows where it's being defended anymore.
Hey, you gotta get those paychecks.
And Brent knows this because he's our NWA power expert.
Well, it's not even power anymore. I can't remember what it's called now.
But eventually he'll be our NWA power expert.
If they start running again?
If they start running again.
Oh, dear.
So the one thing that the former Eli Drake is good at, which we'll see a lot of, he's a great talker. His in-ring work is solid. But he can talk the talk, and you kind of need some more of that in NXT. So it'll be fun to see how he mixed things up going forward. But I think we should get into some of the action.
Agreed.
So what kicked off the show?
So opening NXT TakeOver was the Women's Dusty Classic finale, the inaugural. We saw Shotzi Blackheart and Ember Moon in their adorable outfits. Oh my god, they look so cute! They match, and it was so fire. Taking on Dakota Kai and...
Raquel
Gonzalez, thank you. I don't know why I'm blanking tonight. Like, I'm fucking blanking. What is wrong with me?
It's all good. And they actually kind of had a little bit of matching this,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, their tops were matching.
It was cute, although I know we talked about this on Thursday. You can kind of see that it's like before Raquel was the insurance policy. Now it's like Dakota is the accessory.
Yeah, this was kind of a coming out party for Raquel in terms of being a main player on the TakeOver stage and in NXT. And you can tell that they're lining her up to be in a really, really strong position coming out of this, and I'm fine with that.
For those who missed it on Thursday, shame on you, check out the archive. Kind of mentioned that Raquel's becoming Diesel. How he sort of broke out from Shawn in the mid-90s, like around 94, where they had that break, where Shawn was on his roll after WrestleMania 10, but took the back seat to Diesel as Diesel sort of became come up and was Intercontinental Champion. And there's no second tier belt for Raquel to have as a single, so this, in a tag team sense, is her come up as the breaking out as Diesel, and she'll eventually become a world champion in some manner, whether it's down NXT or hopefully on the main roster one day. That's where this is headed. So her being in number one contenders, yes, I spoiled the ending, yes, they're the number one contenders, this is going to be her platform. But these girls tore the house down to open the show. Holy crap.
We say it time and time again that the opener really kind of does set the tone for the entire show. This was no exception, and they do this all the time on NXT. Like, we shouldn't be surprised at this point on a TakeOver when they just open with something that is absolutely fire, because that's what this was. This was just so good. You had four women in there who knew what they were doing, knew what they were about. They were pulling out some crazy shit in this match, and I applaud all the effort that went into this, because this was so damn good.
Yeah, it was... You got to see Raquel with her power. You got to see Dakota get her licks in. I really like the psychology of Dakota's leg the entire time and how it's like they worked her over. I liked at the beginning it was Raquel just dominated, and then all of a sudden, like, Shotzi and Ember both kind of realized, we need to get Dakota in here and keep her away from that side of the ring. And they just worked her over for a while, and it was nice to see it kind of. You had some smart faces for once.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Because normally it's like, you know, oh yeah, the faces get worked over, there's the hot tag. It's like, no, you actually got to see some psychology for once, and it's like, yes, actually work this through for God's sake.
I don't know what it is, but that one side of the ring with the where the fans aren't, I guess, a little bit, with just the cage, it's like just throwing people in there. Raquel just like chucked Shotzi into it.
When Shotzi tried to do the Hurricane Rana and then just became part of the set.
Yeah.
He's just thrown into it,
And then later on in the other women's match, they just smashed into it as well. I was like, Jesus.
They just like throwing each other into the barricade, I think, especially since the chain link is there and the plastic is there, so they can just like hurl people into the plexiglass, and it honestly makes like a really wicked sound when you do it. So mm-hmm. I think that's partially why is you just get the sound from it, so it just sounds sick when it probably doesn't. I mean, it hurts, but it probably doesn't hurt that bad. Although I don't know, some people have gotten lawn darted into that, and that just cannot be fun. But in the end of this match, your inaugural winners of the Dusty Rhodes Women's Tag Team Classic are Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez. They are moving on. They have a future Women's Tag Team Championship match, which is going to be. This is going to be interesting, guys. I'm actually really looking forward to this just because of specific dynamics.
Yeah, which we'll get to in a second. But there's one thing I need to mention. So it's like they're going through all these spots in the match, and Ember hits like they're doing some big spots towards the end, and Ember hits the Codebreaker, and Vic called everything up into that move, and just sort of. Silenced his way through Let calling. He silenced his way through the Codebreaker. Not so you, because you can't say Codebreaker. It's like, what was that? Which is a thing. Yeah.
That's when you have like the Michael Cole, oh my god, because if you don't want to like call out the name, you're just like, and she hits, oh my god!
Just
or Mamma Mia or something.
But he just like, you just gotta come up with a name for the Codebreaker, like it's a lung blower or whatever, or just something.
Reverse backstabber.
Something. Just something there, so it's not awkward because you know the move, but because it's Jericho's name, you can't say Codebreaker for Jericho. So there's that.
People will get upset.
Also, that Shotzi's sliced bread, number two.
That was nice.
There was some dive I remember. It was like
oh god, it was the Ember was standing on the second rope and pulling the top rope up, mm-hmm. and Shotzi dove between her legs, between the ropes, onto the outside, and almost did a Darby Allin into the announce table. She missed it by about 4 inches, but it was still one of those, like, I messaged you guys when it happened. I was like, there is like no room for error there.
No, there wasn't.
No.
Because you either hit the legs and take Ember out and probably cause a pretty decent injury, or you clip that rope and you're just going to go splat straight onto the ground. But instead, she nailed it perfectly.
Yeah, she did a really wonderful job with that. Absolutely great.
But you mentioned the interesting elements of, and we talked about some of it on Thursday, between now Dakota and Raquel and Nia and Shayna. It's not because I'm not going to say, if you know, you know.
Oh, I'm going to say it. So outside of the ring, in real life, and it doesn't impact anything, Shayna and Dakota are dating.
BRE, best roommates ever.
And so that's going to add a really nice level to this feud, just because there's that intimate knowledge of each other that can just make the promo work and just the ring work in general so much better. And I'm just really looking forward to this because Shayna was like tweeting out the whole time during the match, including using a GIF of her and Dakota together, which was just hilarious.
Couple of them, yeah.
So, you know, I think Shayna is just looking forward to this just slightly, as are we all. But we're also going to get Raquel versus Nia, which that will be
something.
And I think maybe we might see the rise of Raquel where she takes out Nia Jax. We'll have to see.
Please don't break Raquel, please.
Please don't scream my hole. I don't need that in my life. There's enough weirdness on the show in my life. I don't need it anymore.
I think I posted the remix thing for that.
With the Joshua?
Yeah. Who who was on point tonight. He did the opening of the show. He also did the My Hole remix and something else, which we'll
talk about.
Get to.
Because people got paid to do things, and I'm so proud, and I'm very jealous, actually. I wish I'd been involved in it. So up next, you had the North American Championship on the line as Johnny Gargano defends against Kushida. And they were super smart about this because you had the way walking Johnny to the ring. They're cocky. They're confident. He's going to beat Kushida. And as they're walking to the ring, Dexter Lumis decided he needed a little Valentine's Day lovin', and he snatched himself an Austin Theory and drug him off, which Candace and Indy then had to go chase after Austin Theory and find out where he went. So they're running around backstage looking for Austin Theory, and that leaves Johnny all by himself to do what Johnny does best. And that is be Johnny Takeover against Kushida. And to say that they did not hold back, again, understatement.
I like that Johnny, before the match, so he set his backup away, gets into the ring. Kushida is just pointing at him, going one-on-one.
He didn't send them away. He sent them, go find Austin.
They lost their son. They need to go find him.
You know what I mean, though?
I just want to point that out.
He got the directive of, go see what happened. But I like that Johnny, Kushida's pointing at him, going one-on-one. It's just you and me. And Johnny goes to the corner, and he's starting to talk himself up of, like, you're Johnny Takeover. You're, like, this is you. This is what you need.
This is what you do.
Yeah, this is what you know, no one stops you here. And then all of a sudden, he goes out, and of course, it is just Johnny Takeover.
And these two just went and kept going and going and going and going. They worked on arms. They slipped it out of each other's arms over and over again. But the point was for both sides to work over the other's arm, because both have a finish that involves the arm. And by the end, you saw that come into play a lot. But the one final beat on the ramp, holy crap.
Yeah, he kind of buried Kushida about 2 inches into that ramp
into
there.
That shiny ramp.
Well, and the other thing is, we've seen Kushida work. We've seen how he is. I forgot how good of a chain wrestler he is.
Yeah.
Holy shit, those exchanges at the beginning where they're just flipping around each other and rolling, and it was just a clinic.
Yeah.
Yeah, they put on a show. And I like this because it was like, this was the first time in a long time that we've gotten to see Kushida put on a performance. And the same thing with Johnny, where Johnny has had decent matches, he's had good matches, but to see him be Johnny Takeover with Kushida and the two of them just dial it up in this match and just go was such a pleasure to watch.
And the crowd that was there was on the edge of their seats the entire time, just like we were at home, which added to the match.
And what was nice, and they did the same thing in the NXT Championship match, was that you really weren't sure who was going to win this entire time. Like, they made it absolutely 100% believable that Kushida absolutely could just take Johnny's title from him. And I love that when they do that in wrestling, because it's like, I don't like when they telegraph the finish. I don't like when they do the match and we're sitting here going, I know who's going to win. And then you just don't derive as much pleasure from it. So the fact that they made Kushida look like a legitimate threat, he was treated like a legitimate threat in the match, and he almost had Johnny on several occasions.
Johnny's selling of the arm, Johnny's selling of the hoverboard lock and the cross arm breakers and everything like that, where it's like, is he going to tap? His hand was so close to the mat. It's like, it's waving, mm-hmm. it's waving, but it's not hitting the mat.
Yeah, like his elbow was hitting the mat, and you were like, is that a tap out? No,
no,
no, it's not the hand.
The hand has to tap. So he's like hovering and hovering and hovering. And it's like, then he stretched for the ropes with his feet, barely getting to it, but was able to get to it. It just, they knew how to get you on the edge of your seat. They did some moves where, like, then they were just like slipping out of each other's arm like 7-8 times in a row before one was able to get them in a hold. That's fantastic, because they set you up for that throughout the entire match, because they were working on the arm. So it's like, someone's going to get it at some point. Someone's going to hit it. And that was where Kushida finally locked it in, and Johnny was barely able to get the ropes. But it's like, you were able to buy into the story, which was fantastic. And Johnny able to hang the one final beat to end it.
Mm-hmm. Two of them.
Two of them. It was the stage one, and then it was the one on one in the ring to finally end it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the one thing I like about this is, I know some people will say, oh, you know, Kushida lost, it's going to kill his momentum, you know, he loses a push from this. No. The fact that it takes two of those finishes, including one on the outside on the ramp, and how hard Johnny had to fight for this win, Kushida's not buried, Kushida's elevated through this match.
Yeah, Kushida looked like an absolute boss in this match. I mean, there's no question on it, and I would love to see these two go again. I would love to see the feud continue, just because Kushida's like, I almost had you, I know I can beat you, give me one more shot. And I think the more we can see Kushida go, I think the more that we see him just absolutely shine like the star that he is, the better off he is. Because that's the one way you can really counteract the losses, is it's like he looked really, really fantastic. So the loss doesn't take away from that. Because he absolutely took Johnny to his limit. It's just Johnny had the better of him tonight. But that doesn't mean that Johnny will get him next time. Or Finn won't get him the next time. Like, that's the thing. Anybody who faces him, they may not be as lucky. And I love that so much. And also, this was one of the longer matches on the card, too. Like, this almost went 30 minutes. This was 24 minutes.
Yeah, 24:51, I think.
It's almost 25 minutes. So, this absolutely deserved the time.
Yeah.
I mean, this didn't feel too long. It didn't drag. This was just perfect. So, was the video package before this one, or was it?
It was after.
It was after. Okay. So up next, we have the finale of the Men's Dusty Road Tag Team Classic. MSK, Nash Carter, and Wesley taking on the Grizzled Young Veterans, James Drake and Zach Gibson. And oh, Grizzled Young Veterans, you're always the bridesmaid. You're never the bride. Poor fellas. Even though the match was fantastic and they cut a great promo before the match, the vets just came up a little short on this one.
They came up a little bit short, but they did well, you know, cutting the promo on the way out, being just the bastards from, you know, across the pond coming over, staking their claim. And what I also liked was the fact that you had the announcers building up MSK and the story of MSK. Going into this match, a lot of people, you know, probably didn't see them in Impact, probably don't know a lot about them. But they're giving you a good story and why you should care about these two guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fact of tying it into, I can't remember his name, Nash Carter. Mm-hmm. You know, tying in his father to the whole thing. And, you know, oh, that's why he got into wrestling and that's why he has this tattoo. And it's the motivation for him to want to be here and perform. It's like, yeah, you're making me want to be kind of invested in these guys. Aside from just, you know, they're really high impact people in the ring.
They delivered. In this matchup, it was a fantastic match. The one move that stood out to me was the Tope Doomsday device.
Oh my god.
Never seen that before. Holy crap, that was awesome.
Well, it's like they set it up, they tried to set something up like that in the ring before, and they were able to get out of it. And then they were on the outside, and you saw someone get up on the shoulders, you're like, no, they're not gonna try this. And then all of a sudden you see Drake come flying through the ropes and you're like, oh god, they're doing this.
Yeah.
And kudos to Wesley for taking that bump before, you know, receiving it and landing on the outside and then just playing dead for about 5 minutes. Because yes, that's what should happen with that. It shouldn't be a move that someone hits and goes, all right, we're going to go on to the next thing. No, he should act dead, which is exactly what happened.
Because way back when, that's the Road Warriors finish, the Doomsday device, that's a finish. So it's not a transitional move like other companies would have you do. They sold this one. And that's how you're supposed to play it. It's supposed to be sold and not, oh, I can bounce right back up. No, it's a Doomsday device through the ropes and hitting the hard mat. Yeah.
Yeah, something like that you just don't like. Hop right back up and run around and do other things. It's like, yeah. And I think sometimes that gets lost in wrestling, not to not to like gatekeep or anything, but I feel like selling the moves gets lost and people don't necessarily put the gravity on them that they should have. Because it's like a super kick, especially if you get kicked right in the jaw, you shouldn't just get right back up from that.
We'll get to that.
Yeah, we'll talk about the super kick that was heard around the world, but...
No, we don't.
We'll talk about it. Anyway, continue.
But I enjoyed this match because this was my first time really, like, outside of the Dusty Classic, getting to see MSK work.
In a long form.
I've not had a lot of exposure to them, so this was really beautiful to see because I think they're amazing and they're beyond talented. I think this was a great pairing with the Grizzled Young Vets. They got through it and just put on a wonderful tag team match. Like, I had forgotten how starved we were for, like, really good tag team wrestling until the Dusty Classic happened. Because then you're like, right, there's good tag team wrestling. It's not just slapped together teams. Like, it's actual teams that have been together for years that know how to work and know how to work together and can just put together some great wrestling. And this was one of those matches where it's like they are teams. They're not just two people working together. They are actual teams, and this is their specialty. This is what they do. And when you have teams that they just focus on tag team wrestling, they're not necessarily as worried as singles. It's more, yeah, we're going to do this together sort of deal. Oh, God, those matches are just pretty as shit.
Ash, but that's selling as a character. That's character selling. Story match selling is completely different than being an unstoppable monster. It's two different ways of psychology.
Yeah, the Fiend, and even then, the Fiend still sells. Like, the Fiend will still sell matches. He just gets up. Yeah. That's the thing. Like, he would take that move and he'd be down, but he would still get back up. Like, that's the thing. The whole deal with the Fiend is he's essentially Jason or Freddy Krueger on that level where there's just nothing that can stop him.
The one thing I will say, and it's something I believe we talked about last night on CB Radio really briefly, MSK is not your typical flippy group.
Mm-mm.
Now, I mean, there are people who do really amazing high-flying stuff. Ricochet, great. But I would also say, you know, he does really well selling. Like, he'll get hit with something and you can tell from his face, it's like he's really selling what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
With other people, you're flippy for flippy's sake. These guys are using it because it's that, you know, it kind of sets them apart. And if you have someone like a Grizzled Young Veterans, you need to take things up a notch to be able to fight with them. It's not a brawling group. Grizzled Young Vets can also do some high-flying stuff, but it's like you need to kind of elevate your game to fight against them. And that's why someone like MSK works for them.
But in
They're
the
good
end,
at adapting.
Yeah, good, very yes. good at adapting. In the end, MSK win the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic. Big celebration.
So much confetti.
All the confetti. And pyro. Or sparklers, I should say.
Like, you couldn't see them. It was a blizzard of confetti. There were two blizzards in Orlando tonight. Two! One for the women and one for the men, because we are all about equality here.
So now, we talked about it on Thursday, and then WWE decided to remix everything on this show with Cameron Grimes, To the Moon, Lindsay Go.
You know, there are periods of time where I really wish I could be a part of WWE's creative team, because there were meetings about this where people got together and they said, okay, we need to make a country rap video featuring the local redneck in NXT who's just become a millionaire through the stock market. And it needs to involve a pool, a shit ton of money, and man panties. And go. I'm so jealous people got paid to come up with this and make this. Because this was just utter stupidity. It was literally Cameron Grimes running around a pool, a very nice pool, in a series of nice cars with a bunch of money, and sometimes he was clothed and sometimes he just had his man panties on, just flinging money and having a good old time. Like, this was, I have to applaud whoever made this.
Big props to Josiah Williams for putting together that song.
That was great.
He over-delivered.
I think he was a little inspired. It almost makes me a little sad sometimes that WWE does not get nominated for their video work, because I feel like they should. Because they do shit like this. Right? Like, they put this kind of shit together, and it's like, that's award-worthy. I don't know what award that deserves, but that deserves an award. Everybody involved should just get one.
Give them an MTV Music Award.
There you go. Additionally, I need the picture of Cameron Grimes laying on the side of the pool, laughing with all the money when he's in his man panties, as my new phone background. I need that in my life.
Of course you do.
I'm going into Photoshop tomorrow, y'all. It's gonna happen. I'm gonna make a phone background tomorrow. I'll put it out on Twitter for you if you want it.
At Lynn's Ward.
At Lynn's Ward, because I loved everything about this. I love the fact that they have jumped on this stock market train with Cameron Grimes, because it's so out of character for him. It works. Like, he's just ridiculous and he's insane, and I love everything about it, because it like I said, it just works, because he just oversells it, right? Like, he's just out there with the money and the suit and the cars and the top hat and the accent and the furry chest.
The very furry chest.
That boy's furry in all places. And he's just out there owning it, and I love it. Like, the man becomes a millionaire, essentially, and he's out here in this plain poop brown suit because he's hashtag on brand. Fucking bless. Just love everything about this. $1 million Cameron Grimes, let's go. So, after that, anything was just a little bit of a letdown, because how do you follow $1 million Cameron Grimes? We had Io Shirai taking on Toni Storm and Mercedes Martinez in, I'm not going to lie, this was a little bit of a letdown. It was a good match, but it felt very off. Like, they never hit that third gear.
Yeah. So, I have updates on that.
Okay.
Who's hurt?
No one was hurt. In fact, no one on the show was hurt.
Hey, that's a first.
Everyone, as far as Hunter is aware, no one was hurt tonight.
Please don't tell me time got cut and that's why.
Time did not get cut. They were actually given more time. They had as much time as they wanted. In fact, I think they were earmarked for 20. They went 12.
Okay.
There's one thing that happened that was out of their control that kind of cut probably...
Oh, God damn it. It was the table.
That cut time out of that match. The table. The table that, because there's probably supposed to be more selling involved and all that.
The table went on strike.
Toni walks up to the table and then a giant wind just sort of went poof.
You know what it was? Is that Toni Storm's just general badassery frightened the table so much that it just collapsed in front of her because it was that scared.
I like that Wade Barrett tried to cover the table spot by saying when MSK was out there, they shook the table, which is why it went down so easy. So when they banged into it and stuff, so it's like, that's why it broke, which probably was legitimately the reason why the table just went and just sort of shattered on them.
Yeah.
And then they had to improvise. But the girls were told they had as much time as they needed. They were bookmarked for like 20 minutes for the whole entire thing, which is plenty of time. But because of the tables incident, that it was an outside factor that cut, you know, it, that's why the match felt the way it did. I was looking forward to this match the most. I was very disappointed that we didn't get everything we could have out of the match, which sucks. But I was sitting here thinking as we've been discussing the show, and I went, I feel that a lot of ways with the Toni matches lately on big events, where it's like, you want to see more out of her, but they cut the legs are like cut short a little bit. And I don't know what it is, and it may just be coincidental, but yeah, it just seems like a couple times her matches sort of end a little early. But this one was out of their control with the table breaking and them having to scramble and stuff. That said, the work before and around it was really good. It was very enjoyable. Like, her coming off with the headbutt at the end was really good. And it was pointed out on Twitter as Io won. Io has not pinned Toni yet.
Mm-mm.
Nope.
See, I told you that was going to come up. She technically beat her, but she hasn't.
She's never pinned her. So Io and Toni one-on-one could be really good.
Oh, I think it will be absolutely fantastic, because we have seen it before in the Mae Young stuff. But they've grown so much, I think, as performers that it makes complete sense that, yeah, it would be better. And I'm sure that's where they're going with it, is you did the three-way with Mercedes, and now you're going to do the one-on-one between Io and Toni, which is the rematch from the Mae Young Classic, and have them push through and either Tony gets the title or Io finally beats her. But I think this is absolutely to build up Toni Storm and have her kind of her coming out party, as it were, in the U.S. because it's been delayed for a year due to COVID. So I think they're finally hitting the gas pedal on her a little bit. But I would agree, it's like Tony's matches typically leave you wanting more.
And that's because good.
And that's good. Sorry. But I also feel like they put her in situations where it's like it's a three-way where she can't necessarily shine as much as like a one-on-one. Like when she's one-on-one, you get everything you want out of her. But when it's a multi-person situation, it's not as good because it's like she's limited in what she can do.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And like we said, this was the shortest match on the card.
Yep. Because of the table.
Because of that damn table.
God, Botchamania is going to have a field day with the table because they already love table things. And yeah.
I felt so bad for them because poor Tony's just standing there and the table collapses and you can just see the mental dialogue where she's like, fuck!
What do we do? Where do we go from here? How do we transition?
Yeah, and all of a sudden they're like desperately trying to cover, like to, you know, basically set it up because Io still did her spot where she climbed up and jumped on top of them.
Holy crap, yeah, let's talk about that.
But the thing is from where that platform is, I wonder if she was supposed to jump onto said table.
Yeah, she absolutely was.
Yeah, and that was supposed to be, like, the big dive, and they were all supposed to go crashing through, and that would have sold for 3 minutes.
Yeah, because basically what would have happened is I think Tony was supposed to, like, DDT Mercedes onto the table, and the table wasn't supposed to break, and then they were supposed to be kind of laying there, and then Io was supposed to jump on top of them through the table, which, yeah, like Rock said, they would just then lay there and sell it for a few minutes and have kind of a little bit of a rest before they get going. But because they couldn't do that, they were all three, what do we do? And it's just like, let's just go. Let's just end it. Like, just cut that spot out and keep going. And thankfully, all of them had the experience that was necessary to make that call and compensate for what happened. But you could all see, like, you could see the mental dialogues there for a second. We're like, crap. What do we do? How do we keep going? All right, let's do this. And then they just moved on.
Yeah, and props to Io for doing the big spot in the match.
Mm-hmm.
But she is still your NXT Women's Champion.
Can we talk about the finish of the match? Because holy shit.
Go ahead.
Like, basically, Tony and Mercedes are fighting, and we had a bunch of near falls. And Tony's done something. I forget what she did to Mercedes.
She hit the headbutt. The diving headbutt, I believe it was.
Yeah, yeah. Mercedes is just laying there, and she's holding her knee, and then the next thing you see is Io come flying into the frame.
Mm-hmm.
And landing on both Mercedes and Tony, knocking Tony off of Mercedes and allowing Io to pick up the victory. Like, it was a nice little finish.
Yeah.
Kind of chucking Tony out of the way to get the pin.
She's like, move!
Oh, I forgot. My favorite spot in the match was early on, the three-person submission.
Yeah, them just choking each other weirdly. Yeah.
Well, I just like that it was like, okay, you had the two submissions, and all of a sudden Mercedes just comes out of nowhere and hooks like a dragon sleeper on Io, and it's just this wild, like, twister just kind of game of bodies, and you're like, wait, who's got who, and who's going to tap?
Pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah, I know it's Valentine's Day, but that got a little kinky. just a smidge. So, still your champion, Io Shirai. She survives to live another day. And last, but certainly not least, getting all the time it deserves, and rightfully so, because Jesus Christ, this is the way you close. Finn Balor versus Pete Dunne for the NXT Championship. This was a clinic. This was a show on not only wrestling, but storytelling, finger breaking, just you name it. Just they did it here. I have one complaint about this match.
Before you get to your complaint, the words of the night: joint manipulation.
Jesus Christ, Peter.
which is any time Peter Dunne is involved with something,
aka finger fetish.
Pete is just into breaking fingers. That's just it. That's what gets him off. Speaking of Peter, can somebody go with him to the spray tan place and help this child pick a tan that does not make him look orange?
No.
Because when you have him next to Finn Balor, he looks like a Cheeto. So can we Can we possibly have somebody help Pete Dunne with his spray tans? Because I feel like he doesn't know how to pick it.
He's learning.
To be fair,
he is from the UK. They're not probably used to the spray tan.
And to be fair, in Hunter's big match situation in the mid-2000s, he got orange as hell.
Oh, yeah, he totally did. Like, that was the thing. You got your main event tan, and you looked like a fucking Cheeto at WrestleMania. Like, that's what you did. Don't get me wrong. But,
Randy Orton. I'm sorry.
It was Shawn Hunter and Taker got the...
Taker, man. There's some shots of Taker where you're like, what did you do to yourself? You do not look like that, sir. But yeah, no, I understand he's from UK, but Pete Dunne's been getting that spray tan for years now.
He's learning from Hunter and Sean. What do you expect?
Like, they need to take that boy to the spray tan place, and they need to explain to him colors and what looks right on his skin tone. Plus, he lives in Florida now. Go lay out in the sun. It's good for you. In small doses. You can get a tan naturally. It's fine.
So, they just traded. Over and over and over again, this was a clinic. And to say Pete Dunne got enjoyment out of breaking Finn's hand repeatedly. Like, there was one spot where he had him really hooked. And, like, because Pete was in trouble. And he has to get out of it, he has to break the fingers of Finn. The enjoyment on his face when he did so was very orgasmic for him. When he just snapped the fingers of Finn Balor.
The foot stomps on the hands.
Yeah.
Everything he did, just, yeah. Peter had a good night until Finn kind of turned the tables and decided, Pete, this is why you wear knee pads. This is why. Because Finn decided he was going to target a leg and just kept going.
So... Pete loves his fingers, and he does his joint manipulation. But he has strength, and then there's a weakness. And when you pull out his mouth guard...
Which is gross, by the way.
Pete becomes vulnerable. He no longer has his superpowers when you pull that out of his mouth. I don't know why we're pulling it out of his mouth, but here we are.
No, it's to knock him out, because then the mouth guard, one, protects his teeth, and two, kind of stops him from getting knocked out.
Oh, I know, but it's just weird having to pull it out of his mouth.
Finn was a little aggressive in this match. Which, there's nothing wrong with that, but this match kind of sent me places, because it's like, do you really need to be that rough about it? I mean, okay, sure. Like, this was just, there were a couple really awkward points in this match, but yeah, Finn taking the mouth guard out so he could knock Pete out, that was just a little much.
But it worked. But as we were watching, you were like, they're really making it look like Pete has a chance, and Pete had the chance. He had, what, two bitter ends throughout this match, and it's like, those were his shots. He wore Finn down a lot, but in the end, he was, like, Pete was not able to keep Finn down with the bitter ends. And then Finn was able to drop him in the end to retain his title. And those two men just sort of, they went about 25 minutes or so, and they just left it all out there. And they closed the show hot. The fans were on their feet. Finn Balor was reigning and defending on this night.
This was the best Pete Dunne has looked in quite a long time. Not that it's hard to make Pete Dunne look bad or look good. But this kind of takes you back to pre-COVID when Pete Dunne was absolutely on fire and he was coming over and he was just having these tremendous matches. And even when he was in UK and he's having those tremendous matches then, and then it's just like COVID happened and we didn't see him for a really long time. I feel like he's right back to where he was last year. And that's wonderful to see. And putting him with Finn, I would not mind seeing this again. I would be absolutely on board for seeing these two go to again just because of how they built this and how they did this. It was just so beautiful to watch.
It really was. So, Finn Balor is...
The show ended at that point.
Show ended.
No, it didn't.
No. So, Finn Balor's celebrating, and I'm looking, and it's like, all right, waiting. Oh, hey, it's only Lorcan and Danny Burch. They attack Finn. They get him into the ring. it's a 3-on-1 beatdown, and it's going long. This beatdown's going a while, and you're just waiting. Oh, it's Undisputed Era to make the save. You had Kyle, Roddy, and Adam Cole.
Bebe.
Bobby Fish, nowhere to be found. It's okay.
You know.
Well, he's still hurt, which will play in the factors. So they all, they make the save, they clear the ring. And then you have Kyle and Finn exchanging, you know, looks and stuff. And you have Roddy and Adam just there, and Kyle helps Finn up. And every so often, I'm telling Lindsay, watch Adam. Because Adam would kind of, every so often, he was turned one way, and then he made sure he was turned differently when he looked at Finn. His right side was more pointed towards Finn a few times in those exchanges, so it was very subtle. And I kept watching Adam, and I kept saying, just watch Adam. And then they all get up, and he's like, maybe they're not going to do it, and we're going to have that moment where Finn joins the Undisputed Era. He reunites with a club buddy, and you go from there. It's like you're waiting for Finn to do the symbol with them.
Yeah, and just for the record, this had such S.H.I.E.L.D. vibes.
So
from that night, from like this felt exactly like that. Like, and at this point, you know the signs, and you're waiting for it because Triple H and WWE are the reason we all have goddamn trust issues right now.
So
because of this shit that's about to happen.
So. As Finn does about to do his, you know, gunpoint and whatever, he looks over and boom, Adam Cole drops him with a super kick.
God damn it, Adam!
And Roddy's all confused, and Kyle's like, "What
Kyle
are you doing?"
Pissed.
I'm like, we're cool with him. And then Adam Cole, bay. Super kicks his boy and leaves him lying.
Okay, this one hurt only for the build that we had to Kyle's first title defense.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we all know that this was going to come eventually, but dear God, when Adam was like, I've had my chances, it's your turn. And, you know, they're chronicling how long Kyle has, you know, been going at it, and how him and Kyle have been friends for so long. Like I said, you knew, just from the way it all is, you knew it was coming, but it doesn't make your heart hurt any less when you watch him drop him with that kick.
And then you have Roddy standing there.
Roddy's, oh my god, just like, poor Roddy.
Roddy just saw mom and dad fight and doesn't know where to go.
So Adam called, basically urging Roddy to come with him, and he just stands there looking down at Kyle, and Roddy's stuck in between a rock and a hard place at this point.
Yeah, Roddy's basically the dean of the situation, and he just doesn't know what to do. Adam is the Seth, and Kyle is the Roman, and everybody's just standing there really awkwardly, like, what do we do now? And poor Roddy is going to have to make a decision on Wednesday, and goddamn if I don't want to see it.
So we all heard months ago, and this was many a month ago, I think it was midsummer, that they were planning on turning Kyle babyface, and they did. They turned him babyface along with the rest of the Undisputed Era, and we were all cool with it. But Adam Cole's no babyface.
Well, that was the funny thing. I thought I read at one point the plan was to turn Cole and O'Reilly, and they were going to keep Fish and Strong together. I mean, I understand also that Bobby then got hurt.
Yeah.
So that changes some things. But it's still we've only got, like, tiny tastes of Adam Cole as a face. I mean, I know that he is just an absolute fantastic heel.
He is
so smarmy. He is so great.
If he needs to be Shawn Michaels' babyface, he could be Shawn Michaels' babyface. He studied the man so much, you can tell he would run the role, but as good as Shawn Michaels' babyface was in the mid-90s, prick Shawn so much better. And prick Adam Cole is so much better.
Because prick Adam Cole has been learning from prick Shawn Michaels and prick Hunter Helmsley, and we're just all here for it.
Well, and it does give you a lot to work with, because if Cole does go after Finn, you know, shut up and take our money. Because we've seen them work each other in the multi-man matches, and we're still just like, dear God, this is amazing. At the same time, you now have that really deep story with Kyle that you can go to, and that's kind of like the second version of Tommaso and Johnny, in a sense. Like, it's going to be a personal blood feud between these two now.
So, couple things. One, Pat McAfee tweeted out, "The Undisputed Era is dead," and a gif of Ric Flair going, "Woo." And also,
God damn it, Pat.
And also tweeted, "Internet wrestling community, I am now accepting your apologies in abundance. You are by the far the dumbest group of humans on the internet. You could never have known your hero was a treasonous scumbag, but I knew it all along. Please use hashtag Pat was right in your apology tweets."
No, we knew. We knew. We just accepted him as he was, you know?
Yeah, there's no denying his nature. You just kind of live with it for a little while, but still, don't feel great about it.
You don't feel great about it. But we're on the road to WrestleMania. And the talk in the of the town is, hey, we're going to put an NXT match on the show.
Yeah, because there's no, with the schedule, there's no takeover around WrestleMania like there usually is.
Nope. So if you're going to put your top guys on a show on WrestleMania, Adam Cole and Finn Balor are your top guys for your NXT championship match at WrestleMania.
I mean, you're not wrong.
Because they're both, one, Finn is an established WWE main roster star who's working down at NXT, and Adam Cole delivered last year, was it 2 years ago now? A year and a half ago, when everyone was left in Saudi. Adam Cole delivered.
Stepped up.
When you needed him the most.
He was MVP for an entire month.
Yeah, when you needed him the most, Adam Cole delivered.
Remember Cole versus Daniel Bryan?
Which Daniel Bryan wanted to go an hour with him.
And they could have.
They could have.
With no problem. Those two could have just gone.
Yeah. So.
I mean, they still could. None of us would complain. Just throwing that out there.
But Adam Cole, in the end, is a better heel. Always has been. Always will be. We're going to get Kyle and Roddy, I would think, first, leading to Kyle and Adam at some point. But Finn and Cole should be your Mania match. And it may not be, and they may do Karrion and Finn and whatever WrestleMania or who knows what. Or maybe a triple threat.
That's what Lindsay brought up right before the show, and I'm not going to lie, I would not be opposed to seeing all three of those guys just lay waste to each other at Mania.
I wouldn't be opposed, but Kyle needs a little more to be on that platform, I think.
I understand.
As a single. I think he needs a good 6 weeks. If you can build him strong in 6 weeks, I think you can get away with it. I just think when you're trying... Okay, this is a bad way of phrasing it, but this is the only way to phrase it. When you're trying to sell to Vince McMahon, Finn and Cole you can get away with.
Yeah.
We weren't saying triple throw with Cross. We were saying Cole, O'Reilly, and Balor. But that wouldn't be bad, but I think that's overkill with Cross in it in a triple threat. I think that's overkill for Mania. Because Cross, you have to reestablish because of the injury. Because you never got the chance to fully develop him. That's why the match with Escobar on Wednesday is a good launching off point for him again. I know he had the thing with Damian, but he needs more of a build to the WWE universe because he's only been in for a short while.
Yeah, and just to address something that LaMans brought up earlier, Cross going up against Escobar, and if he does, you know, slightly lay waste to him, doesn't harm Escobar at all. Escobar has had a phenomenal run through the 205 universe, and he dominates that side of it. So right. Going up against someone who's a heavyweight, and especially with the mentality of Cross, isn't going to hurt him. It's just you have to have Cross go up against someone of a certain level, and you don't want to, you know, put Dexter in that position. You don't want to put Cameron in that position. So you take your cruiserweight champion, who's cocky as all hell anyway, and just kind of bit off more than he can chew.
But let me explain the overkill part. When considering putting NXT on WrestleMania, you have to time out everything you've got. You got 2 nights, but you got 3.5-4 hours per night. If you add too many people to the show, to that match, and with someone like Finn who gets a grand entrance, and then Karrion would need a grand entrance, you're taking away time from the match itself to do the entrances. When NXT is the third brand, it just, if you can limit it to two guys, you have a better shot of giving them more in-ring time and deliver a better match.
Well,
plus,
Oh, go ahead, sorry.
Plus, for Mania, you want to have your two real headliners for NXT on that show. And no offense to Karrion Kross, he will be a headliner for NXT. He's just not there yet. That's why they have him kind of in a holding pattern with Escobar, and they'll probably put him in a holding pattern with somebody else. It's because there's a line to get to Finn Balor right now, especially because Kross came back awkwardly in Mania season, and it's just they don't have him in a position where he can go to Mania with Finn. They could get him there if they really wanted to, but I think in terms of Mania, you want your two top names on that card, which are Finn Balor and Adam Cole, and you let them deliver a really fantastic match and a really fantastic build. Because you have Finn, who's kind of been a tweener heel, sort of more playing that babyface role, with Adam Cole being the true heel in that situation. And they're just going to be smarmy and snarky as shit to each other. And Karrion, and there's going to be a lot of mic work. And Karrion's shtick doesn't necessarily go with what they're probably going to do between Adam and Finn.
And here's one other thing with it. When it comes to Karrion in that spot, you, one, don't want him to lose, and two, you don't want his first main roster exposure to be in that match.
Yeah, I was going to say, my problem in, if it was a three-way with Karrion in it, is you need Karrion to be dominant, because that's just what you've built him as. And the fact that, you know, he fought Keith Lee and essentially dominated Keith Lee, you don't want him to go into this triple threat match, dominate everyone, and then just have, like, Cole out of nowhere get a smarmy, you know, pin on Finn. Or you don't want Finn to sneak the pin away from Karrion, because that's not necessarily Finn's MO right now. It's, you have to beat the prince, essentially. So putting Karrion in it just doesn't necessarily make sense, I think, in the long run of this match.
Plus, you're going to have other history that comes up, like the Bullet Club stuff, stuff from Japan, stuff from the Indies, that Karrion wasn't necessarily involved in. Like, there's a lot of history between Adam Cole and Finn Balor that they can draw on that Karrion doesn't necessarily tie into. So in this instance, I just don't think it's a good idea to have him there. Now, later, you can build Karrion up, and absolutely, if they do anything like SummerSlam, Karrion should be there. And moving forward, Karrion should absolutely be one of the stars and one of the main focuses of NXT, but just not right now. I don't think taking him to Mania is a good idea.
If Karrion was going to be in a Mania plan, he would have been on the show tonight.
And I think the fact of having Karrion just sitting there as the boogeyman plays so much better and fits so much more in how everything goes. Just have Adam and Finn, you know, go after each other, and have Adam be like, you know, I always want the title. You know, we have beef dating back a ways. But then you just have Karrion sit there the whole time and go, it doesn't matter who wins between you two. It doesn't matter what you guys think. I'm just going to obliterate whoever comes out of this with the belt.
Yeah, because ultimately, Karrion and Scarlett are opportunistic. They're not going to put themselves in a position where they know, hey, by the way, we're going to lose, or there's a chance Karrion's going to lose. They have the benefit of being able to sit back and watch and wait and have that opportune moment where either Finn or Adam are licking their wounds from the fight, and as you said, come in and basically be like, all right, bitch, you're mine.
And here's one other point before to wrap this whole discussion up. What if Karrion is not long-term in NXT?
He may not be.
That's another point, because supposedly a lot of people think he has, you know, all of the kinds of things that you want to see on, say, Monday. And if you can roll out him and Scarlett on a Monday night entrance, yeah, that could work. Picture them rolling right up into the Thunderdome.
Because they may want to use him, give him his big moments on a main roster instead of using them down on the Wednesday show. One tweet about something, nothing going on with about this topic. Johnny Gargano tweets, "All right, Candice and I can have Valentine's Day now."
Oh, God.
I mean, he kept his title. They can have Valentine's Day now.
Cover the dog's eyes. And where's your son?
Somewhere. He'll be fine. He'll be fine.
You know, someone else found their Valentine tonight.
Yeah.
May have been under weird circumstances, but Dexter has found himself a Valentine.
Look, Dexter likes it when they play hard to get, and Austin's been playing very hard to get, and he's been a little frustrated ever since the whole Cameron Grimes situation. So Dexter just needed a little lovin'. That's all he needed, and that's all he wanted. So he just said, fuck it, and it's Valentine's Day, and he just went and got himself an Austin Theory. I mean, you know, there's nothing really wrong with it until we find out what happened, you know, afterwards and what Dexter did.
Lindsay, chloroform was involved. That's not, you know, sexy. That's kinky.
Well, Dexter does aftercare, so, I mean, you know... he's a kinky guy. He's into that kind of weird shit. The question was there a van with a zombie?
We'll have to find out. Brent, picks. How do we do?
Okay, this one's interesting. So, in last place, at 3-2, is The Wheel.
Hey!
The Wheel did fairly well overall, but had a few picks that went sideways. Rock, you went 4-1. You missed on Tony Storm.
Yeah, I know.
I went 4-1. I missed on Tony Storm.
Wait.
Lindsay!
Wait.
You went 4-1.
Wait.
You missed on the Grizzled Young Veterans.
Wait.
Did we lose to the fucking 8-Ball?
The 8-Ball went 5-0.
God damn it!
The 8-Ball beat us, for God's sake!
No!
We beat one inanimate object, the second one. Screwed us.
That cursed 8-Ball.
It went 5-0.
Treacherous whore.
It went 5-0.
It's fired.
It really went 5-0.
It went 5-0.
I think that's the first time that's ever happened, isn't it?
Yeah, that is the first time it's ever happened.
The 8-Ball has won Pick'em before.
Has it?
Yeah, I want to say
Pick'em, but it's won never been undefeated.
It's won a WWE Pick'em. Yeah, it's never gone perfect.
It's doing a default dance on us right now. That's okay. We'll have to get it at Elimination Chamber, which we're talking about next week, right, Rock?
In like 4 days.
Well, it's exciting stuff, that's right. So you got stuff to plug, so plug away.
As Lindsay just mentioned, we'll be previewing next WWE Elimination Chamber Thursday Night Live, 10 p.m. Eastern on the Rack. But we'll be live tomorrow night, 11 p.m. Eastern for the Monday Night Raw post show. Saturday night, midnight-ish, CB Radio, CBRadio.com, GreatTheGreatDebate.com. Last night we did, Heartbreaking Moments, aka Celebrity Breakups, and that actually plays into what happened tonight. Undisputed Era broke up on Valentine's Day.
We had Blame Lindsay's. Blame Lindsay's all night.
All night long.
Sorry, guys.
Russell Talk Radio will return to the airwaves Sunday night to review the Elimination Chamber. It's at Wild Talk Radio. It's facebook.com/WildTalkRadio Network. If you have Amazon Prime, you can link it to your Twitch account. It's called Prime Gaming. And you can subscribe for free by hitting that purple rectangle button below the screen. You can also use credit code Rocketstock in the Fortnite item shop or in the Epic Game Store. Hashtag Epic. Partner Flash is in there. So is Tron.
I have both.
He has both. You should get them all too. Because, you know, reasons. And hopefully you enjoy Fortnite Red Friends when we do it on Thursdays. And mainly Saturdays. Because we talk a lot on Thursdays. It's just the way things are at the moment. But more will be coming on Thursdays. Because there'll be... He's thinking in his head when pay-per-views are. There'll probably be a couple of quiet weeks coming up. For Thursday Fortnites. Thinking in his head. Anyway... Lindsay?
Well, you can follow me on most of the social medias at LinsWard, LNSWRD. And Brent, where can they follow you before we wrap up?
You can follow me on Twitter at Kane Kittens.
And he hosts the Interns Corner.
And the Interns Corner. We can't forget the Interns Corner. So, everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed it. Like we said, check us out tomorrow night for the Raw post-show. Rock and I will be back, and then we will be back on Thursday for the Rack, 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on WildTalkRadio.com. Also, if you get a quick second, check out the fine folks over at mbgfilms.youtube.com/mbg1211. So for Brent, for Rock, I'm Lindsay Ward. You've been listening to The Rack right here on WildTalkRadio.com, and we will see you tomorrow night. Till then, bye!
WildTalkRadio.com.